Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Here's Lorraine Chisholm.
Those of us who work for social justice often have no choice but to pursue our fundamental goals by means that are unclear, ad hoc, half-baked, contradictory, and sometimes downright surreal. These are the words of a man who has studied the history of our social movements, conducted extensive interviews with grassroots activists about their involvement, and reflected long and hard on how we can sustain a life of activism. They're the words of Paul Loeb, the author of the book Soul of a Citizen, Living with Conviction in a Cynical Time. And we've contacted Paul this morning to kick off our special on building a toolkit for social change, and he joins me from Chicago. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm very pleased to be talking to you this morning.
Yeah, me too.
Now your book has the subtitle, Living with Conviction in a Cynical Time, and I wonder if you could tell me about the meanings of the two images that you chose, a cynical time, and in contrast to that, living with conviction.
Well, the cynical time is a way that so much of the culture that dominates globally these days just disdains. It disdains idealism. It makes it a sort of mocking word, sort of as if it's naivete to try and address the situations of our fellow human and the crisis of the planet. And I think that that's much of what we're up against these days. I mean, there's certainly some blind, undeserved trust in elected leaders, and God knows we're going through that on the state side with the war that we've now embarked on. But I also think that a lot of what stops people is just a sense of futility, the sense that it won't matter, and it's not historically based, because you can point and you can look at just all sorts of powerful social movements that have mattered, that have changed lives, that have changed the society in any country where you go. But those are taken, by and large, those aren't on the dominant dialogue in the culture, and those examples aren't taught in the schools. And so it's very easy for people to feel just there's nothing that it's going to matter, it isn't going to do anything any good, anyone we ever elect would be hopelessly corrupt, so I'm just going to stay out of that area. And it's very disempowering, and I think that that's part of what social change activists have to overcome, is that sense, particularly among people who are trying to draw into our movements, that it won't make a difference. And we need to be able to say that, look, these are long-term struggles. They are often difficult. They're often uphill. But yes, not only do they matter, but in fact, they also do succeed if we keep at them long enough.
Well, I think, Paul, one of the things that can immobilize people is that we can be overwhelmed by the magnitude of our problems and the scope of the struggle it seems to call for. And certainly in the days since September 11th, I think, maybe that's even a more powerful feeling among people. And I wonder how you think people can get past that feeling overwhelmed.
Well, there's a couple ways of doing it. And one is just to say that, I mean, there's a wonderful woman I write about in Soul of a Citizen who actually lived in Seattle most of her life but was born in Victoria. And she was died at 101 years old last year, an environmental activist named Hazel Wolf. And I would always ask her on how do you keep going, because I would literally be over at her little apartment, and she's 99 years old, and she's turning out a newsletter on her computer and organizing a international conference on her fax machine, and with twice the energy of anybody half her age. And she would say, well, you've learned some things. You learned that you can't do everything, but you can do what you can, and you can keep on, then you can do some more, and you can keep on doing that, and you can do that your entire life. And so part of the, in an overwhelming time, maybe we can't take on individually every single issue, but we can raise fundamental issues, we can link them with other issues, we can know that there are other people out there, and we can keep on doing that. And certainly the situation after September 11th is a difficult one. It's a difficult one globally. It's not acceptable to have people, fly airplanes into buildings and kill 5,000-6,000 innocent people. And yet, I think a lot of times we feel like, well, will our voices matter? And I would argue that our voices can matter very much in opening a political dialogue, I live in the U.S., but internationally as well, about the appropriate ways to respond. And I mean, in my own district, I live in Seattle, and my congressman started speaking out questioning some of the Bush policies after a ton of community meetings raised a lot of real questions. And so the more that we do that at the base, These are difficult issues to deal with without, I think, easy, totally clear-cut answers. But if we're still pushing in the direction of global justice, our voices can very much matter, and it's probably more urgent to make them heard in this time because of the possibility of igniting a sort of, if the more reckless path is taken, a global war between Islam and the West. So I would argue that people have to do two things, and this is a real core message of Soul of a Citizen. They obviously have to be strategic to any kind of effort that they make, think it through, act as intelligently as possible. But then we also, to a certain degree, have to let go of the results. And we just have to say, we're going to do it as well as possible, and we're going to keep on doing it. And we don't know exactly how our efforts are going to turn history. I mean, you look at Mandela in jail for 27 years in South Africa. There's no way that his knowing at any point things are going to turn. You know, I don't think he was even envisioning that the idea of his being president of South Africa. And yet that kind of persistence, where you just keep on going, that ends up ultimately changing things.
Mm. I think what you say in the book about our efforts to change the world, that they certainly cannot be predictable or have certain outcomes, and that we can't really calculate whether we'll win or how we'll win. And you mentioned Nelson Mandela. I was wondering if there are other histories of social struggles which brought about significant change that you learned from.
Oh, all sorts. I mean, and they're large and small. I mean, I write in Soul of a Citizen, there's a wonderful woman I profile who has an eighth grade education in San Antonio, Texas, who gets involved. She's not very much involved most of her life, and then an old woman in her neighborhood dies of the cold, and she's outraged because basically it was a needless death, and she gets involved in a community group, and she is absolutely terrified. The first moment she has to even just meet with some of her neighbors, you know, she almost panics. The moment that she testifies before city council is just, she says, not only did I forget my speech, I forgot my name. and yet, step by step, she gets involved, and she ends up testifying before the U.S. Congress and Senate. And she says, these people found something in me I never knew I had. And part of the what I've tried to do in Soul of a Citizen is it seems to be a book that works both for longtime activists and for people just getting involved or for people trying to enlist others. And part of what I think I've tried to do is to say, look, you don't need to know absolutely everything about an issue to get involved, every fact, every 17th decimal point statistic. You simply need to be willing to learn as you go and let go of that standard of perfection and just say, all right, I'm going to engage these issues, I'm going to take them on, and sooner or later I'm going to be able to, you know, if I persist long enough, some powerful things can happen. I mean, one of the people I profile is actually my closest friend, who's a commercial salmon fisherman, and he's done all sorts of cross-border alliances works. He lives in Seattle, but works closely with the Suzuki Foundation folks in BC, and the people up like in Clayoquot Sound and stuff like that, and working on issues of salmon sustainability. And I look at how this person has transformed the sort of Alaska-based and Seattle-based commercial small family fishing fleet, like the gillnetters, into a real force for sustainability, who are constantly having alliances with the Sierra Club or Friends of the Earth or the other environmental groups. And this is just one person who I happen to have known for 30 years, and I've watched him take a group of folks who originally tended to be fairly racist because they were scapegoating the Native Americans over salmon allocations and stuff like that, and very individualist. And now they're a real, I mean, they're always working together with the tribes, and they're regularly having alliances with environmental groups, and they're a real force in some ways for social justice in our region in the Northwest. And that's just basically my friend's persistent work over the years, building these communities and raising these issues and saying, look, it's not the tribes that are your enemy, it's the Weyerhaeusers and the Mack Blows and the other huge timber companies that are basically destroying the watersheds. Are why the salmon runs are declining, and those are the people we need to target.
I think one of the great things about your book is that there are these inspiring stories of people who are just ordinary people who are working on a day-to-day basis on these issues. And although you profile people who are leaders, leaders as well in large movements, I think it's those everyday kind of stories that are incredibly inspiring to people who are interested in political issues. And I was also struck by what you say in the book about how our culture doesn't tell us very much about how social struggles are won. And the story of your CNN interview that you gave with Rosa Parks seems to me a very striking example of that.
Yeah, it certainly was to me, and you know, my suspicion. I mean, when I listen to if I'm up in BC and listen to you folks, or even CBC, it certainly leagues above what you get in the States. But nonetheless, I think most people don't know about social movements, and it came to me. Rosa Parks was being interviewed on CNN at the same time that I was on one of the shows, and they introduced her, and they basically made it sound as if this woman just stumbled onto the bus in Montgomery, Alabama, accidentally. Acted alone, just kind of unthinkingly changed history. And it's complete nonsense because she was a civil rights activist for 12 years with the major civil rights group, the NAACP, and is part of this small group of people, as often change occurs, working step by step, trying one thing, trying another, learning from other cities. And what I realized is when they said, we're so proud to have Rosa Parks on, one day she refused to move to the back of the bus, and that started the civil rights movement. And it was complete nonsense, and it did injustice to all the work that she and others had done all the years before, leading up to it. And it made it sound as if she acted alone, where in fact she was part of a community. It made it sound as if her action was just casual and accidental, where it was very intentional. She'd been to training sessions at a labor and civil rights center in Tennessee, called Highlander School, the summer before that. And it sort of dismissed the 12 years of persistence between her first involvement and that day in Montgomery and the 10 more years before the U.S. Congress and Senate finally passed the Civil Rights Bill. And so what I realized is that this was one of the few examples that I can go to most, a seventh grade class in the U.S. and people will know the name of Rosa Parks. But what they won't know is the real history. And that's the best you get, and then what you usually get are the kind of caricatures where, I'm sure lots of your listeners were down on the streets of Seattle during the WTO protests a couple of years ago, and looking out and seeing those 50,000 people marching and the 10,000 people patiently being gassed and tear gassed and pepper sprayed and courageous civil disobedience, and then you flip on the TV and who do you see? You see the 50 people who are smashing the windows of the Starbucks, and all the rest of our efforts are invisible and dismissed. Mm. In the face of this one caricature. Mm.
You write in the book.
That was U.S. TV and how it represented.
Yeah, well, it was represented the same way here. You write in the book, Paul, that we often fail to acknowledge and celebrate our victories. Why do you think that's an important thing to do?
Well, because this work is hard, and there's a way in which, and I've seen, and I'm sure all of us know, really good social activists who've burned out, and one of the things I do in Soul of a Citizen is try and address the problem of burnout, because you get people, they get them, they're energetic, they do lots of good stuff, they get some experience and skills, and then they're gone, and what a tragic loss. And I think part of that is that we end up feeling that if we don't achieve ultimate justice, which is awfully hard to achieve in this world, that somehow none of our efforts make a difference, that our small steps are too inadequate, that in the face of just the horrendous crises that our world faces, that our efforts seem so small. And so we end up, after a while, we start denigrating them. And I think that that's very dangerous because every step that we take towards justice, towards sustainability, those steps matter. They build for the future. And if we throw that out, I remember Alice Walker once said, she said, we talk about forgiving our enemies, we've got to also forgive ourselves. We need to recognize that maybe we're not going to be able to do everything we want to achieve. I mean, one of the wonderful American anti-apartheid activists, who was a student activist who I interviewed first, 8 or 9 years ago, and he said, look, I realize now, I've been in this struggle for justice for 10 years, that I'm probably not going to achieve everything I want to achieve in the course of my lifetime in terms of social justice, but that's okay because I'm part of something larger than I am, and it started long before me, and it's going to continue long after me, and that allows me to act. And I think it's that sense of larger connection that sustains us over the long haul, a being part of something larger, a larger struggle for justice. And I think in the absence of it, we really do burn out, and we feel isolated, and we get beaten down by the cynicism of the culture.
Paula, it's been a pleasure talking with you this morning, and I hope many people will pick up your book because it really deserves a wide audience. It's a great, practical, and inspiring book.
Oh, well, I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, there's actually a website, soulofacitizen.org, where they can check it out and get a little bit of a taste of it and all the rest.
Okay, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Anytime.
All right. I've been speaking with Paul Loeb. He's the author of the book Soul of a Citizen, Living with Conviction in a Cynical Time. And his website is at www.soulofacitizen.org.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada.